Good evening, and thank you for joining us on Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. We are in our second week of Daybreak, Tara Rye's Bible study, and she eloquently said this Jacob story last week. So yes. If you weren't there last week to hear it, she probably won't do it again. So,
well, you know what? It's on the podcast. You can go to the computer at TaraRye.com or CultivatingHearts.org.
Perfect.
And you can click on the podcast for what would be the January 30th episode, and you can listen to the actual story
background. And
know the background. And now we're going to go into learning some truths that we can take in about Jacob. All right, last week we ended and talked about that we were going to look at that Jacob prays a prayer. And here what we're going to do is I'm going to have Tanya open up, and she's going to read for us the prayer that Jacob prays as his brother is coming with his 400 people. And Jacob ends up crying out to God. And we have looked at the fact that Jacob is a deceiver. Mm-hmm. His life is riddled with deceit. Mm-hmm. The people he has interacted with has been deceivers as well. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we have the deceiver bowing before the one who is truth, holy God. Mm-hmm. And he prays a prayer. Let's see what he prays, and let's look at how we can take this prayer and apply it to our lives as well. Go ahead, Tanya. Verses 9 through 12 on Genesis 32.
Okay. Then Jacob prayed, O God of my grandfather Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, you told me, return to your own land and to your relatives, and you promised me, I will treat you kindly. I am not worthy of all the unfailing love and faithfulness you have shown me, your servant. When I left home and crossed the Jordan River, I owned nothing except a walking stick. Now my household fills two large camps. Mm. Oh Lord, please rescue me from the hand of my brother Asa. I am afraid that he is coming to attack me along with my wives and children. But you promised me, I will surely treat you kindly, and I will multiply your descendants until they become as numerous as the sands along the seashore, too many to count.
I love it. Okay, what a great prayer. And what I think what is so astounding is that it is very real. And what we have to understand is when we are in circumstances or any time in our life, whether we're in circumstances or not, when we talk to God, we want to be real about what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay? And I want us to look at the fact that he is praying to God. And he's asking, he asked something, but I want us to really examine the prayer and just focus in what we can learn about this prayer and how this prayer really can be used in our own lives. When you look at this prayer, I want you to take a notice that in he says, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, he addresses the fact that God is the God of his heritage and his family. Okay, there is an ownership, a heritage, a lineage that has been left to him through his fathers where they have passed down that we have a relationship with God. We are relating to God. And when we draw near to God, that is beginning a relationship. It's not something where God is far away. God is not removed from their lives. He is recognizing that God has been alive and active throughout his family's history. Right? And this is a profound truth that we can recognize for our own lives. The other thing that I wanted us to catch that is an amazing thing that he says is that he states what God tells him to do. Sabrina, would you look at verse 9 and at the end where he says, O Lord, who said to me, what does God tell him to do?
Go back to your land and to your family, and I will cause you to prosper.
Okay. God made a command to Abraham, and Abraham's his great grandfather. No,
right.
Yes, it's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And so it's his great grandfather. And so he is going through and he's recognizing God is alive and active, and then he is recognizing that God has given a command to his family for something for them to do. He has told his family to do something. He has told them specifically, I want you to go back to your country, and I want you to go back to your relatives, and then God also does something else. In that, he says, you will prosper. Mm-hmm. God gives a blessing. There's a promise. Right there in one verse, we see a profound truth that we all should take. Okay, how can I look at just those three points, that recognizing who God is and how he's active in his family, he recognizes the command that God gave, and then he recognizes the promises that were given. And he has not yet said anything about wanting anything. Has he?
Nope. Okay. No requests.
And what we're going to end up finding in this prayer, he states nine different things. And only one of them is actually a request. I'm always amazed when I study the prayers of the men and women of the Bible, and that they are so radically different than how I pray sometimes, where I can have a list that's way too long instead of just acknowledging who God is. And he started off addressing God, then stating what God has said, and then recognizing the commands that God has given, and recognizing the promises that God said he'd fulfill. Mm-hmm. I want you to think about how that relates a sense of ownership. Mm-hmm. Because if I know who God is, and I know what God's commands are, and I know what the promises are if I obey those commands, and I'm rightly relating with God, I can rest in the fact that those promises will be made known in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't have to stress about it. But if I do not have a relationship with God, if I have not had a relationship through his son Jesus Christ, knowing that Jesus died on the cross for me, and I haven't rightly related with God, and I could still know God's commands, mm-hmm. and I can even know what God's promises are, but if I do not first have that relationship, that lineage, that heritage, I can't rest that those commands will fulfill the promises that God has for me.
Right. You'll be a person full of unrest.
Yeah. Mm. Completely. Completely. Yeah. So I want us to think about this right now. Let's take it. And I mean, that's a lot of information, mm-hmm. just for three points in one verse that I have given. And I want us to think about our own lives right now and ways that we are working this in our life. I want us to think about it and how we're praying. And I'll tell you, I have been dealing with some issues where I feel like I have been dealing with great spiritual warfare. And I discovered, God forgive me, that I was focused in on that which was not God. Yet right here with the example of Jacob, where was his focus first?
On God.
Right. Who God is, mm-hmm. and how he can relate to God. And I was reading through in my normal daily reading. I just happened to be in Exodus, and I'm reading about the Exodus as it's occurring. And as I'm reading about the Exodus, and I am seeing how God provided the cloud by day to protect them and the fire by night, it hit me in my heart. Wait a minute. Why did God do that? And Scripture says, even right down to the hardening of Pharaoh's heart through all the plagues, he did it so his glory would be revealed. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, God, am I dealing with spiritual warfare? And my focus is on the spiritual warfare. Mm. The whole point behind the battle is that my focus will be on the glory of God, not on that which I'm fighting.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so here I made a practical application in my life. I said, God, I'm going to choose to acknowledge who you are in my life.
Right.
I'm going to choose to recognize that you have provided for your children a pillar of cloud by day and a fire by night. For Jacob, you reminded him of his heritage he had in you. For Terah, you have let me remind you of the day that I came to know you. Mm. And the day I said, yes, I believe on the Lord Jesus. You are my God, mm-hmm. and I am your child. And so I'm going through and I'm recognizing who I am and who God is. And in your promises, you promise you will never leave us and never forsake us. So as the battle is ensuing, I don't have to focus in on the battle. I don't have to look at what's dark and ugly and mean and whatever else that we could mm-hmm. put as the description of whatever it is we battle. If I have my eyes on the Lord, my focus will be in the right place. Do you guys have anything similar or that relates to how this is going? Or am I putting you on the spot? You're both quiet, listening. Tara's in teacher mode.
You know what I love? I love how it takes us through the process, you know? He's got a process where, okay, he's in fear right now, right? Concerned about what's before him. But boom, this is how I'm going to handle it. Mm-hmm. Eyes fixed on the Lord. Even, I don't know if we're getting into the 9 points yet, but even, where did it say?
He has.
I'm not worthy of all the unfailing love and faithfulness you have shown me. So right away, humbled himself. That is the next thing, I think. And then when we're in that right perspective, then, I mean, he just opens our eyes to all of it. And I think that's when we can stand firm on the promises.
And you know what, Tanya? You just summed up the whole point behind Genesis 32. Mm-hmm. And I'll say it the way that, to explain it. What most people don't realize is that where he is standing, he's at the Jabbok River, okay? And at this point, he sent the messengers off to Esau. And he is standing, his toes are on the very edge of what the promised land is.
Mm.
The crossing of the Jabbok River will begin into the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hebrew words, I had said last week that it would be fun if we could hear this in Hebrew, but it does have even some resonance within the English language, which I think is fun. But it's Jacob at the Jabbok River, and he's wrestling with God. And each of these words in Hebrew, it's like, I'm just going to butcher this. So if anyone's Hebrew and listening, and just forgive me. Jacob, and then Jabbok, and then wrestle is Jabbok. So it sounds very similar. I know I totally killed that. So forgive me. Have grace upon me. I've got it written here how to say it, but I just know I just totally. It's Jacob on the Jabbok standing ready, because those sounds would have really caught them. Because when we are about to enter in where God has something great, this is huge, we cannot go in as who we were.
Mm.
Jacob as deceiver cannot enter the promised land. He cannot cross over the Jabbok without first dealing with who he was in his past. He has to deal with Jacob the deceiver. And we'll get into the wrestling that he's going to have after he has everybody go across, and that it just can't happen. He cannot enter the promised land until he has dealt with the deceit that's in him. And once he humbles himself before God, and it's not anything else that he's had from his past, it's just him and God. It's that face-to-face encounter. Mm. And in this case, it's the face-to-face encounter with his brother. And the fear of facing the one who wants to kill him. In the face of that circumstance that causes him to bow before holy God and say, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. I cannot do this. And that's when it begins his face-to-face encounter with God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the release begins to happen. And once he has the struggle all night, that's when he's able to walk into his daybreak.
So necessary, wow, for us to get to that point of there's nothing in me. There's not any wisdom in me. There's not any strength in me. There's not any money I can go to. There's not anything except now, God, I'm empty, nothing. Yeah. And now that's how God can use us and create amazing.
Naked I come in this
amazing
world.
Things. Yeah. And you know what? It's back to what you had said. Not for us to be glorified, but to glorify him.
Totally. Yeah. Always. Always. And as far as where that point falls, you were asking, because you said, am I getting to this point? I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before we even get to humility.
Oh, whoops.
There's a lot.
You're getting to the heart of it, because that's the heart. But he has to first get to, you said he confesses his worthiness, but he also ends up sharing his fears, but he does them in a different order. So it's, he addresses God. He addresses God's command. He reminds God of his promise. Do you see that? And it's so funny because Tanya, in my lesson yesterday at church, I was really pressing in with the women that God has a sequential order for how things need
to
be
done. And so many people want to go from there to the promise. And there's so much that has to be
worked out. Nobody wants to go through the middle.
I know. The tough stuff.
Let's just skip that.
Right. But did you know, in physically with life, if you go out and you get outside at night and you go through the whole dark of night, it is a process of letting go of the light from the day and embracing the darkness of night. The darkest moment is the second before dawn happens.
Wow.
The very darkest moment. And so oftentimes where we feel like we cannot not go any further, that means that we're about to have a breakthrough. But it requires that we do the next steps. And the next thing that he does is then he begins to confess. He says, I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness that you have shown your mm-hmm. servant. He confesses, I'm not worth what you have done. Mm-hmm. And through that confession, he is actually then goes into the next thing, which would be point five, is that he recognizes God's character. He recognizes and points out who God is. He says, you are kind mm-hmm. and you are faithful. And you know, when he was saying, I'm not worthy, don't you know he's thinking of all the times he's been deceitful in his life mm-hmm. when he has not represented faithfulness
or
kindness to another person. Mm-hmm. And so it only makes sense that these would be the two character traits that he would really cling to in God. Don't we do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we recognize. Go ahead, Tanya.
Oh, no.
You're going to say, it looked like you were going to say something.
No, I was agreeing.
Yeah.
Like our very weakest points, we're seeing the strength of that in the God.
So let's go through those ones so you can see again. He says who God is and the heritage, the lineage. He states God's commands. He recognizes and reminds God of his promises. Then he confesses his unworthiness. Mm. He talks of God's character, and the next thing he does is he begins to praise God. He hasn't yet said what he wanted God to do, but he's gone into praise. And so his praise is, I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups.
Mm.
This is so profound. Huge. Mm-hmm. I went over. He had nothing. He was in flight because he was running because his brother was going to kill him. He had nothing. And now he has, even though we're not in agreement with it, he has two wives. He has children. He has more than he can begin. I mean, the gifts that he's sending to Asa is huge. So he is praising God for what he has already received. He's recognizing God has blessed him abundantly. And the awesome thing is that he's giving back to God verbally the praise that God deserved all along.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to have to come back next week because the prayer's not done. And we have many things that we can learn from him. And so I want you to come back because we're going to hear what he asks of God. And you need to hear that. We're so glad you're listening to Cultivating Hearts. And we just thank God for you. We hope to hear from you. You can contact us at terraride.com or at cultivatinghearts.org. God bless.